Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to TBT Two Blunt Takes. I am Sean, here with my compatriot.
Hi.
So, I guess there's a lot to talk about in the NBA. We're halfway through the season. So, we feel that we will... We're going to make our picks for the season. We're going to talk about MVP, but we wanted to start with injuries. Because...
That's going to play a big factor in MVP now.
It plays a big factor in the whole league. I saw a tweet that kind of put it in an easy perspective. The three most popular players in the NBA are hurt right now. Steph Curry with his tailbone. He should be better. That's not going to be as long as this. LeBron, high ankle sprain, and the ongoing Kevin Durant saga. And Embiid on top of that. But we'll get there. We need to start... with the LeBron injury because it happened today.
Yes, and that's one of the most pressing things that will ever happen in the NBA. Is LeBron missing significant time.
The Lakers are currently 28-14, third in the West, right behind or essentially tied by record with the Suns for the number two seed. Losing LeBron is... it's obviously really terrible, but losing LeBron and continuing to have Davis out for as long as he's been out really, really sucks. They don't, their record really sucked when it was Anthony Davis out and Dennis Schroeder. Schroeder was gone for 4 or 5 games, and he came back and they have righted the ship. They've been like 12-1 since he's been back.
They're not going to win a single game without AD and LeBron. I don't think they'll win.
There is the potential for the Kuzma 35 points, the Trez 26 point game with a really, you know, solid defensive.
But will they happen at the same time? That's the thing, and that's what they need.
That is, yes, I don't know. Let's see. Like, if LeBron is still on the bench, he's still giving them that energy. These guys are tough. They are a finals team. So I know you take away the two best players, but can they, you know, I don't know if they would lose every single game. Tomorrow they're supposed to play Phoenix, so we'll see. We're going to talk about the Suns a little bit later, but they are, have a great record and they've been really, really good, despite their recent loss versus Minnesota.
Yeah, that's
fucking... Ooh, okay. So tough start to the week, which is Phoenix, the Pelicans. Well, actually, the Pelicans are ass, so
the,
not really.
The Pelicans, that'll be a crapshoot for them.
Yes. And then Philly. Philly with Embiid out, but they still have a really solid defense and they have really solid players, and it's not an easy matchup without Embiid. And then... an interruption by Scarlett. and then March 31st, so in about a week and a half, they're supposed to play the Milwaukee Bucks, who are heating up. Giannis is playing better. So if LeBron, I mean, 11 days, I assume he'll be out for 11 more days. There's no timeline yet. This just happened.
They said indefinite today, and that's really just because they haven't had it fully evaluated yet.
And he's 36. He is the king of the league, and they have finals expectations, so they're not going to play around. This bitch is so crazy. They're not going to play around with LeBron. They'll let them lose. If they lose 10 games in a row, they're not going to force LeBron to come back. And he's not going to force himself to come back. Because whether they're in the 3 seed or the 8 seed, come May, they are still...
As long as they have him and AD in rhythm, you know, they just haven't come back with 10 games left if they're both healthy.
I would still give them a 7-game series to warm up. Now, we were talking about this. The who would you take in the... if it was a weird first-round matchup, Lakers-Nuggets, would you take a maybe still sort of rusty Anthony Davis and a, maybe a month off for LeBron will be good. But any injury, like he is 36. He spends $2 million a year on his body. But the older you get, the more those injuries still add up. Now, yes. Tom Brady is about to be 44, and he just won his 7th Super Bowl and he gets hit very hard by strong football guys. So his ability to recover from injuries that I'm sure are swept under the rug and not talked about.
I mean, he got surgery this offseason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, automatically, pretty much every NFL player leaves the field at the end of the year and goes to get surgery. But
that's true.
I mean, I'm sure LeBron will be able to come back with enough time before the playoffs get started. And I wouldn't be surprised if he came back and he was just on fire again.
I wouldn't either.
He came back.
AD is the real question mark.
AD is the question mark because we have seen the 17-point game. We saw in the playoffs where against the Nuggets, he would be held to 4 or 5 rebounds. And that's in the playoffs. So this, he might come back a little rough.
Yes.
And if they really slide, I mean, if they really slide, they don't have home court, and they are kind of a rusty team, it might be tough for this team in the first round. I'm not saying they'll lose in the first round. But if they get a team that matches up decently with them, but is on fire, is clicking, and their main players are obviously haven't had to set up due to injury, It could be really tough for the Lakers. We hope that, I mean, like we said, it's super vague, so we hope that this is it just hurt, but it's nothing too bad, and it'll only take him a little bit, and he'll come back healthy.
The concern is when they say high ankle sprain, they're usually intentionally avoiding the word Achilles.
High ankle sprain in the past has always, always been Achilles.
Yes.
So, and I don't, what did they call Davis's? Did they call it an Achilles strain or Achilles sprain?
His was a strain.
His was an Achilles strain. But they try to cover up the severity, and now Davis has been out for two months now. We're coming on 2 months. It feels like it's been forever since I've seen him on the court.
Yeah.
I mean, and they've done really well when we'll get around to MVP. But, I mean, just their record without Davis is pretty incredible. See, everything is currently tied. This is the craziest MVP year we've had in a while because there's 5 to 9 guys who could be in first place in MVP and who, like, truly deserve it. But Embiid went down last week. The 76ers have played all right without him. They've also dealt with more injuries. But he was really on a tear. He was like, this guy is winning MVP this year. Unless something happens, he's winning MVP this year. And something happened.
Yep.
Luckily, it seems like Embiid is not going to be out too long. And it didn't probably seem like it's a serious injury.
What, 7 to 10 days from what I heard?
That's not bad.
No.
If he comes back just playing on fire,
He could still maybe take it.
He could take MVP. I mean, part of it is like we were talking about, the defense is incredible. I mean, he's a great, just what he does to the court when he's out there protecting the paint, he alters every team's game plan. You have a monster standing in front of the rim.
You can't drive. You can't work the post.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't drive. I mean, even to drive and kick is riskier because not only do you have the paint is locked down by one guy, and then you have the arms of Simmons and the long arms of Matisse Thybulle and the long arms of Tobias Harris. Like, they're a long athletic defensive team.
Yes, they're a big team.
They're a big team, and him just locking up a whole section of the paint really helps everyone else just to be a pest for everybody.
Yes.
They've still done well. This has happened a couple times where Embiid gets hurt and Simmons, whether he has 43 points or whether he has 15 and it's a triple-double and in the last 5 minutes he just defensively starts poking the ball away and getting chased down blocks and clutch rebounds. I mean, they are still able to run the team around him. And Daryl Morey came in this year and said, we're putting shooters around these guys. So now it's Simmons. In the years in the past, it was tough because there would be times where there would not be a lot of shooters, especially last year when it was a miserable experience for everybody there. Now they have shooters. So Simmons in transition kicking the shooters is pretty
brutal. That's what he always needed.
So the 76ers are keeping the top in the East. They've managed to fend off the Nets from claiming best in the East.
For now.
For now, every time when Embiid went down, I was like, oh, okay, well, Philly's going to lose some games, and the Nets don't seem like, but they, like, the Nets lost yesterday, and, you know, that just puts them back one step. I guess it doesn't totally matter, only when it comes to the final round in the Eastern Conference, but it's just impressive that they're hanging out without him. All these teams doing well without guys who are supposed to be MVPs. It's super weird, including one guy who continues to be out, which is Kevin Durant.
Yes.
As we're saying, the Nets are pushing for the number one seed in the East and doing pretty good without them. They had a rough game against Orlando yesterday. I imagine tomorrow they'll come back and play well. All I can think about during this run, well, first of all, you know, we've just been in awe of Harden and frankly of Kyrie. I mean, just that combination. We kept thinking about when they were first really going to move Harden. We were like, oh, are they going to get rid of Kyrie? You know, it was like, is this Kyrie insurance? You know, just in case Kyrie decides to disappear for another 2 weeks, or
Kyrie just does some Kyrie shit again.
Or blows up the locker room because he's mad, doesn't want to talk to anyone for 2 weeks. Like, now it's actually Kyrie and Harden. But what we wanted to see was Harden and KD playing off each other like the OKC days. We still have barely seen that. It was only a couple games with those three together, and still Kyrie would sit a game, KD would sit a game. Harden has come in and played every game. And,
and he's been their best player, and it hasn't been close.
Leading the league in assists. Top, I think it must be top 10 in scoring. I don't know. There's so many people who can score almost 30 points per game. It's hard to keep track of who's in what position and scoring anymore. We don't necessarily know what's going on with KD. They've been quiet about everything, obviously. I mean, I get it. But we hope to have him back comfortable. That team has gone through some experience with each other before the playoffs get started, because I mean, right now the Nets would be playing either the Knicks, the Celtics, the Pacers, or the Bulls, just due to the play-in tournament. Those are not teams that are gonna cause a, you know, a 2-7 upset.
No,
but they're gonna make it tough. The Celtics aren't gonna make it easy. Tatum and Brown and Smart and even Kemba. Kemba still continues to not be very good, but
I mean, they're an inconsistent team, but they're still a good team with a lot of playoff experience.
Yes, with a lot over the past couple years. The Knicks, like we were just talking about them, they grind you down, they play hard, they're big, they're athletic, and they're coached by a real defensive-minded coach. So they're not going to be easy to beat in the playoffs. So it'd be nice if the Nets aren't trying to work out the kinks in the first round of the playoffs, because KD just came back a week and a half ago. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He has to get into the, because Harden's had the ball a lot. He's only really splitting it with Kyrie.
Yeah, they can't afford to use the first round as a trial. Like, I mean, we were saying the Lakers could.
Yeah. Yeah. Philly is going to come in hot. Giannis is going to come in hot.
Yes. That they really need to have a rhythm going before they get to the playoffs. Otherwise, they're in trouble.
So, actually, to talk about, to move on from KD, we'll talk about an ex-Net. Caris LeVert came back after they found a mass on his kidney, which was a result of him getting traded. He said it saved his life. So,
it most likely did, because, I mean,
they might not have noticed it until it was too late. And
that happens a lot with kidney tumors.
The kidney is nothing to fuck with. I mean, it's a vital organ, let me tell you. He came back and he's been playing well. Not like, you know, blowing you back, but I think the first game he came back, he had 14. But then the second game, he had like 26. So he's getting to scoring. The Pacers, I'm sure, like his individual offense as like a, hey, the system that we're running here isn't working. Now let's throw it to this guy who might spin twice and lay it up. I mean, Caris LeVert last year in the playoffs, and just throughout his tenure with the Nets, when they give him the ball, Duke can score in an isolation. He can put up big numbers when you give them the ball and you give them the opportunity to score. So I'm sure the Pacers will find a great way to use him, and we're happy he's back because he's a fun player to watch.
Yes, that's a positive note at least. With all the
injuries, yeah, gotta come back and look good, definitely.
Injuries, they always pile up as the season goes on. You know, we always get surprised, but it's the same thing every year. But
yeah,
it seems like it's been hitting heavy this past week. So
yeah,
it's good to at least have someone come back.
Well, I wish we could get TJ Warren back. I want to see if that was like, I want to see if he can pick it back up from where he left off, because real. Bubble Warren was wild. Bubble Warren was a wild boy. It was fun to watch. I loved having him, and that made the Pacers fun, because they could have a guy come off the bench.
I mean, otherwise, might drop 50. When are you gonna want to watch the Pacers?
Not really at all.
Never.
Never. So
never.
Yeah, it'd be.
You can't
be
nice tell me someone is out here going out of their way to watch Miles Turner.
But what would be fun? A fun is a three-guard lineup of Brogdon, LeVert, Warren, Miles Turner locking down the paint, probably Sabonis, I guess. But like, that'd be kind of lit.
That gives me some early 2010 Hawk vibes right there. You know, that'd be good team-oriented basketball, because there's no true stars, and yeah. They play well together, and they could, you know.
In one night, TJ might have 48. In one night, LeVert might drop 43. And Brogdon is a very solid guard. Solid, not, you know, crazy. He started the season off better. He has slipped since then. We are getting off topic. We're talking about the Pacers. Yeah. Hey, there you go. How often does that happen, Pacers fans? We kept alluding to it. It is the number one topic in the NBA. And it has been a lot of the season, because there's so many guys who are so good. And individually, the numbers are crazy. Like, just individually, all these guys are like, some of them are historically good. Like, this is something you've said a couple of times, and I couldn't agree more. When was the last time there was two centers in the MVP conversation? I mean, two awesome players.
I mean, for the last, you know, decade, we've written off the NBA as like, oh, it's a guards league now. You know, it's a guards league. The Warriors came in. They showed that you need an amazing one and an amazing two.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. And then now, 2021, you know, the last two MVPs were power forward.
Yes.
Giannis. And then this year, the top two guys for most of the year have been centers.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has different MVP rankings. My personal top two have pretty much all year been Jokic and Embiid. When Embiid went out, LeBron might have slid in there. I don't know. But it's been Jokic and Embiid for me all year long. You know, being out for a month for Embiid sucks. That doesn't help in just the conversation. It would have helped his MVP case if their team started to fall apart, but they've been playing well without him. And it was kind of like, you tweeted about this. What did you tweet about with LeBron and the co-MVP?
Well, I mean, I was going to say, you know, the clear trend with the Nuggets this year is how bad they've been without Jokic.
Yes.
There was a point where without Jokic on the floor, they were playing like a 5-77 team.
Uh-huh.
That's what their efficiency was showing. The worst team in NBA history by a considerable margin without Jokic on the floor. Statistically speaking, not just, you know, as a fan, like, oh, they suck when he's not there. No. Worst team in NBA history.
And part of that is sometimes Jamal just like sucks.
He really did.
Like
for a bunch of stretches. And even now later in the season, he still has some games where it's just.
He came back from the All-Star game and sucked
are you
for
even
two
here?
Games in a row. Yeah.
But, you know, I was going to say that and then I realized, well, what are the Lakers without LeBron right now?
Yeah.
They're the exact same thing.
The
exact same thing. I mean, as much as we, you know, want to say Schroeder can give him some good games with 25, 30 points, and Harrell can do the same thing.
Kuz, he's been really good this year, especially on defense. But
overall, I mean, it's the exact same situation.
Yeah, and they have the better record.
You know, out of 10 games, I bet they lose all 10 before I bet they go 5-5.
Mm-hmm. And if Jokic went out right now, there's the chance Murray could pop for 2 weeks.
2 weeks, but he hasn't shown he can sustain
it
for long.
He hasn't really needed to. Remember what we were talking about this the other day, where I saw something about the numbers where Coach Malone started playing. He was playing Jamal Murray 5 minutes per game without Jokic, and he's boosted it up to 9 minutes per game. And Murray, that was when, especially leading up to the All-Star game, he started playing really well, and his numbers went up. It seems like if he has the ball more, he'll play better. I don't know if he would suddenly start averaging like 32 over the 2 weeks that Jokic is gone and just starts dominating, but I don't know if they would fall apart. Like, we will see with the Lakers. Like, we'll just have to wait and see now. Like, for the next 2 weeks, and we'll talk about it and think about it, but we'll just have to wait and see. Yeah. And if the Lakers, like, stay afloat, then I don't know.
That does bring it back, though. I mean, both of these teams, you don't know where they stand without these two guys specifically, but with these two guys, they can beat anybody. They're immediate championship hopefuls. And that's why I think it's so hard to give the MVP to one over the other. Now, I'm also a very biased LeBron fan, you know. Mm-hmm. I think if you gave him MVP for each of the last 10 seasons, I wouldn't have really complained about that, honestly. I mean, Harden had a couple of good years, but Steph had a great year too. Yeah. But LeBron, as he said a couple days ago, should have more than 4 MVPs.
Yes. Although it is like when you do look at the MVP conversation, like Kuzma said, and he used the right word, and it's totally true, it's a political award. Like, it was the narrative that won Westbrook the MVP. Harden won the MVP and then played poorly to close out the playoffs, especially Game 7. The next year, he averaged 34, and still, I think he came in like 4th in MVP voting that year. People were just tired of him after that, after he blew in the playoffs. He's blown in the playoffs for years now.
That's why Giannis isn't going to win it this year.
He could, last year, he was like historically out of this world good. And he won the second MVP, Defensive Player of the Year. Like, this guy was truly incredible.
He earned those awards. I mean,
this year that he, part of Giannis's problem was that he started off too slow, frankly. And the team started slow and it looked rough. And there was times where you and me were talking about it. Like, yo, if they lose 2 more games, we're going to have like an emergency podcast about this team, because I thought they were going to fall apart in the beginning of the season. And they have picked it up, and Giannis is playing like an MVP again. And as exciting as anyone in the... Brennan asked me this last night. Who is your like most exciting player you want to watch? I'm like, I think it's Giannis right now. Especially with Steph out, I really want to watch Giannis more than anyone. And like in a game against Philly, like, he is a superstar and he is fucking incredible.
I probably have to say James Harden, but
I would also have to agree with that. I think she asked me that just when I was looking. He had a really bad game against Orlando.
It's just like it's tough. I mean, it's Orlando, James. What are you doing?
Come on, buddy.
You should have put up at least 15 assists against them.
So we both agree, just as of right now, Jokic is the clear number one MVP candidate.
Yes.
Just with the absence of Embiid and LeBron, Jokic has been really solid all year, and their record is improving.
Yes. So, that said,
who comes afterward, taking LeBron and Embiid out, because they're not playing, who comes after Jokic in MVP?
It's gotta be Dame at 2. Dame's gotta be number 2 at this point.
He is statistically the most clutch player in the league. clutch points, efficiency. The game's won when he is in the clutch and is scoring. I mean, he's the clutch, and they're playing way better than they're supposed to, frankly.
Yeah.
Just with the CJ injury to start off the season, like, he started off hot and then he got hurt for, CJ was out for 6 weeks, something like that.
Yep. He's still not back yet, is he?
He is back. Yes, he just came back. The Nurkic injury, which Nurkic was kind of rough.
He was kind of important to them, just defensively especially.
Defensively, to have a big body. Just to have a big body to deal with Jokic and AD and Gobert, just the big guys in the league, and going out east, all the big freaking giant freaks, including the Greek Freak, who is definitely currently third in MVP voting behind Jokic.
He won't get it, but...
And that's partially, like we said, the beginning of the season for him, but also voter fatigue and the second round exit in the playoffs versus the Heat, the embarrassing loss.
Mm-hmm.
After, you know, the embarrassing Raptors loss, like, that team should have gone to the finals and they choked against the Raptors.
You can make a case for James Harden at this point.
It's so crazy because there's so many times where we're looking at his numbers and we're looking at the record and just how the team plays when he's there, and he is, and has been since about 2015, is like one of the best, truly the best two or three players in the league.
Yeah.
Always. This year's MVP voting is so packed. It has so many deserving players.
The guys who have won it before, they just kind of get tossed out.
It's hard, yes, because there's also the new blood, Embiid and Jokic. But, and Dame actually was not won an MVP. But Harden is leading the second best team in the East. They're better with him, and he's kind of transformed the team. It more or less, the team sort of orbits around him, but everyone benefits from orbiting around him. He's leading the league in assists, just over 11. Ultra efficient this year on less touches, especially in comparison to when he was at Houston. Obviously, he had the ball a lot. So it'd have to be Harden. I think now we need to get into our NBA awards.
Yes.
We'll start by picking our personal MVPs. Mine, I'm going with Jokic.
Yep. We are both Nuggets fans here.
Yes.
I'm going to say Jokic too. I had Jokic before Embiid was getting hurt too, but now it's just it's more clear of a margin.
Absolutely. I also have a bet on Jokic to win the MVP, so I really, really want that to hit. Defensive player of the year, I went with Rudy Gobert. I just feel he is the anchor on the defense of the team with the best record in the NBA, and that's good enough to win defensive player of the year.
And it kills me because, you know, I spiritually struggle with seeing Rudy Gobert make more than a McDonald's employee. I can't fucking stand the Jazz or Gobert especially. But we were talking about, and you made good points, it's got to be Gobert.
Yeah.
I mean, the other person I would argue is Simmons, but he has Embiid, who's, you know, another top-tier defender.
Yeah.
Holding down the paint. So it's a little easier for him to hold down the perimeter.
But the counter argument, really, and it could be Simmons. I just went with a Gobert for the reasons I said. But Simmons is not limited like Gobert is. Gobert is amazing at locking up the paint. It is extremely valuable for that team. But not only is Ben Simmons really good at the rim, at defending the rim, he is the best perimeter defender in the NBA. And yeah, might go down as one of the best perimeter defenders in NBA history. This year, just the number one moment that stands out to me was when they played the Mavericks. He fucking tortured Luka. Tortured him. And when I think about it, I mean, you're supposed to pick your awards based on the regular season, but I can't help but look forward to the playoffs. If we do get to see Nets versus Sixers, being able to put Simmons on Harden is Because I assume every team's playoff plan is going to be, we need to make lockdown Harden. That's what they did in 2012. That's what the Heat's plan was versus OKC in 2012. They said, KD and Russ can get theirs. Harden needs to be locked down. They're double teaming anytime he's on the floor because that's the facilitator. That's the guy who's the spark. So I imagine that'll be, all these years later, I imagine that'll be a similar game plan because he is, like we said, he's leading the league in assists. He's the playmaker. So if you have the 6'10 super athlete, Ben Simmons, who is like, it's not just super athlete, like his intelligence, his ability to like, he's 6'10 and he's the size of a center and he strips the ball from anyone as well as I've ever seen. I mean, he can pick your pocket easy and he uses his arms like pinchers almost to like reach in, avoid the foul.
Yeah, he's not just, you know, getting up in your face and just playing physically. He's thinking, you know, playing intelligent, thoughtful defense.
I've seen him like guys go to take like they leak out. You know, someone grabs a rebound, kicks it out to them. They're already at the three. They, in their head, know for a fact they're wide open. They're going to hit that three. And out of fucking nowhere comes Ben Simmons flying down the court and jumps and skies and blocks the shit out of their three. I mean, I've seen it happen several times to close out a game. And it's no problem for him. In transition, if you have that monster behind you, that's like Buda Baker just looking behind him as he came back calf. It's like, oh my God, what is that? And he's just, I mean, he's a giant and he's so athletic and so smart. Like, the argument for Ben Simmons is that he can guard every inch of the court.
Yeah.
And Gobert.
He can lock down the one through the five.
Yes. You could put him on Steph Curry or you can put him on Giannis. Or you can put him on Jokic.
Yep.
You can put him on Davis or LeBron or Harden or KD or Kyrie.
Yep. You can put him on anybody and you don't have to worry about it.
I might just change my pick.
The only thing to keep it with Gobert is the Jazz are currently the number one team in the NBA through his defense.
Yes.
Through his defensive presence. And I don't know how it's happened, but it has. So
He's good at being a giant at the rim. I'll give him that. Keeping it with the Jazz, I personally think sixth man of the year is going to be Jordan Clarkson. The guy is a bucket. Actually, I enjoy watching Donovan Mitchell. I don't care for many of the other Jazz players, but Clarkson is, he really is a walking bucket. On defense, he's close to useless, but 20 points off the bench, very efficient, a spark plug, and there's times where he'll go for 40, and that is the sixth man if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone else you can really make a case for at this point. It's
the only case I would make would be Montrezl Harrell. Recently, he's not been good enough throughout the season. He just had a hard time adjusting to the Lakers. The Lakers had a hard time adjusting to him. But in the past few games, he has been balling off the bench, a couple 26, 28-point games to help boost the Lakers, and that's been really useful for them. But Clarkson has just been a bucket for the Jazz all year long. And he's had some really, really good games, so we got to give it to him. Maybe the easiest award to give out is
Rookie of the Year.
Easily.
Easy. Not even close.
Anthony Edwards has played good for a week. but this guy has started off the year good. And once he got moved into the starting lineup, he has been not just the Rookie of the Year, one of the best players in the NBA.
Yeah.
We're obviously talking about LaMelo Ball.
Yes. The best ball brother. LeVar always promised us, and you know what? The man didn't lie. He was right. LaMelo is the best of them, and he is the most exciting player for me to watch right now. I know we just talked about that like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I forgot about that because I was just thinking about Harden from an earlier conversation, mm-hmm. But LaMelo is the one player I go out of my way to watch more than anyone else right now.
I would I actually thought about that, and I would totally agree. Part of the reason I didn't say it is because I feel ridiculous saying a rookie is my favorite player to watch right now, but, you know, I could have said that last year about Zion. Like, anytime Zion was on, I had to watch Zion. And yeah. He's also on that list. But truly, I just love watching the Hornets. Like, the Hornets experience is so fun. And he is a huge part of it. Like, when he's out there, when he has the ball, I'm dead set locked
up. He makes the rest of the team more excited to play because they, all those players know that LaMelo's trying to feed him.
Yeah.
So if they're hustling, if they're moving fast, if they're getting themselves open, he wants to get them the ball more than he wants to store it himself.
If you can cut to the rim,
he's a selfless guy.
He will get you the ball.
And it's not like, it's not, to me at least, like Westbrook's assists, where a lot of them are almost selfish assists.
Yes. Yeah. He wants a triple-double.
Yeah. LaMelo's, they're smart passes, they're good passes, and, you know, he doesn't make unnecessary ones either. Like, if he has a good shot, he'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
But he reads the floor so well.
I'm sure my answer for most exciting player would be LaMelo. If I don't, like, I think about him, but then I think about the Hornets, and I think about the announcer screaming, having an overreaction to everything, and it's amazing. Like, they have a great color commentator. He's awesome. Scary Terry. I've been a fan just since the Celtics. I thought he was really good with the Celtics, and I kind of felt like they made a mistake letting him go. And then he went to the Hornets, and I was like, well, that's goofy. Like, that contract looked goofy. But now he's a clutch fourth quarter scorer and a ultra-efficient three-point shooter and a tenacious defender and a real athlete. So they got a good player. Yeah. I have Gordon Hayward on my fantasy team. I also thought the Celtics really fucked up. Flat out, they really fucked up. But Gordon Hayward, I knew he was solid. I knew he just didn't get enough touches. And and this Hornets team, first couple games of the season, and part of it was LaMelo, but part of it is the whole team. The ball just moves around the floor like poetry. It's beautiful. They don't have the best record in the NBA. They're not necessarily knocking your socks off. They're the sixth in the East. They're 20-20. They're wedged between the Knicks and the Hawks pretty firmly there. They rarely feels like they get blown out, but they're just a little too young and don't necessarily.
I don't have high expectations for them this year, postseason wise.
If they had a good option to upgrade at center, I would think that they would be a tough first round out, but truly their lack of defense at the rim is their, I mean, and also LaMelo is a rookie. Like, they have a lot of young guys.
Yeah, yeah. They need more time to gel, and they need a little more time for LaMelo and those younger guys to experience that rougher playoff level. Them making the playoffs this year will be great for them.
It might be a sweep. They might get swept out. They might. I think they're really
even if they do get swept, that's a dub for them because it still gives their guys good playoff intensity experience.
That's all and that matters.
I think that's the one thing LaMelo can gain the most from, too.
Absolutely.
Because he's already tearing it up everywhere else, but he needs to see that playoff intensity because it's a little different.
It's different.
And he won't have as easy of a time.
And how does he respond when he's shooting really well from three this year?
Yeah.
I mean, he's right around 40%.
But that's his guys aren't taking his shot seriously. You know, in the playoffs, every single shot your opponents put up, you take it seriously.
And if you're going into the playoffs shooting 40% in the regular season, teams are going to look at you and go, this dude shoots 40%. So you have to guard him like he shoots 40%. You have to guard him like he's a good shooter. And when guys turn it up, especially if they end up having it, if they are the sixth seed right now, they're playing Giannis and the Bucks. That wouldn't be very fun.
That wouldn't go well.
They don't really have the guys to guard Giannis.
Giannis would put up 30-15.
30-15 with maybe two blocks a game. Yeah, Giannis would have his way with them. But it would be a great learning experience.
Yeah.
And they would see another level of defense.
They're realistic about their expectations for this year, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That said, you know, I did talk a lot of crap about Jordan's ownership skills, and he got the best rookie and he got the best free agent last
year. When they
got
this new GM, he drafted Miles Bridges, who's been solid. He still's not a great shooter or playmaker, but he's a solid defender, really good athlete.
Solid role player.
So really good at, you know, knowing when to be open for a lob or knowing when to roll to the rim or whatever and getting a good rebound. PJ Washington, who is actually really, he's a good player. He had a 40-something point game this year. He popped sometime in the past couple weeks. He's really solid sometimes. He's only like 6'7". They play him at like small ball 5. And if they're not dealing with like fucking Embiid, like they are pretty successful with it because he's also a good shooter. So he's a really smart player. That's good for them. They drafted LaMelo. They have signed for Terry Rozier, who's turning out to be a good player. And I think they might have drafted Malik Monk before this GM, but it's been a good he's been a solid GM, and Mike has stayed unattached. Oh, the signing of Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward's a good player. He's a smart, talented player, and a great veteran to have on the team. So, yeah, it's been all good moves for them. That was a long – I can't help but talk about the Hornets. They're so fun. They just make me happy. Yeah,
literally the tangent there. You're back to our awards.
My most improved, I had Jeremy Grant. I thought he was great with the Nuggets, but the crazy high-volume scoring that he took on – he got hurt, and that slowed him down. But he said he wanted a greater role. He said he wanted to score more. He wanted the ball in his hands more. And when he got the ball in his hands more, he was good. The team sucked. And sucks and is terrible, but he's
good. It's clearly not because of him. You know, he's absolutely doing his part. Everyone else is just falling short of every possible expectation.
Yeah.
But this is where our picks are gonna differ a little bit, actually, for the first time. My most improved is Julius Randle. That's just because the Knicks, the meme of the NBA, are about to make the playoffs, and it's because he's playmaking well, scoring well, and, you know, he's not the bust that we'd all really written him off as after last season.
Yeah, 17 assists the other night, triple-double. He's been shooting it from three well. His defense has gotten much better this year. He has just overall bloomed into a really incredible player. I am so used to, over the past few years, just not even addressing the Knicks as an organization. I just am like,
they didn't deserve
whatever. It. Like, get out of here.
Is Audit James Dolan say something funny this week?
That yeah. Yeah, right? Is James Dolan like, I'm not selling the team? And everyone's like, fuck you! But I've tuned in a couple times, kind of, to watch
Julius Randle,
because I started thinking about RJ Barrett, but we're talking about Julius Randle. Yeah, he is. I couldn't disagree. It's a great pick. For me, coach of the year is Monty Williams, a team that didn't make the playoffs last year and now has the third best record in the NBA.
Second
best record in the NBA. Second best record in the Western Conference, just behind the Jazz. Adding Chris Paul helps a lot. But this year they added Chris Paul and Jay Crowder. And besides that, it's pretty much the same team as last year. And they have the second best record in the Western Conference, second best record in the league. That's not just Chris Paul.
No.
I mean, that is...
Unless Chris Paul was, you know, averaging triple-double, we could say it was, but he's not.
You look at the box score a lot, it's a lot of 14 points. Less efficient, but decently efficient.
He's gotten good assist numbers, but he's not scoring as much as he was last year.
Not as good with the steals.
And Devin Booker is actually led the team in assists on quite a few nights, too. I mean, he's become a smarter player overall, too, this year, and that's... I think a lot of that is from Monty Williams. All the changes he's made,
the way he's found a way to fit all these pieces together and done it really well. And they have one of the best records in the league. So, I mean, from not making the playoffs to second best record in the league, that's the coach of the year. I mean, that's my criteria. And it's
hard to go against that. The only person I could go against that with is the Jazz head coach.
Quinn Snyder.
Snyder.
The only reason, frankly, is just they couldn't make it work last year for whatever reason. It's pretty much the exact same team. They added Clarkson halfway through the year last year, but besides that, it's almost the exact same team.
Yes.
And they were having a hard time last year, and this year they come back and best record in the league. Best team
in the entire NBA.
But and that kind of makes me feel like, why couldn't you figure it out last year? Like, I'm just curious what happened. You know, we don't really know. Maybe the pieces just didn't fit, and Mike Conley wasn't as solid as he is this year. But
that's true. A lot of their players have stepped it up overall.
Bogdanovich needed surgery, and he had surgery, and he's come back. And he doesn't put up crazy numbers, but he's really solid. When you watch him, he's solid on defense.
He's one of the best role players in the league.
Yeah. Great at knowing when to pass the ball. And he sort of is more of a hockey assist guy than an assist guy. But, you know, whatever. It helps him be the best team in the league. So now we wanted to cover – I wanted to do who is going to be in each conference finals, the two teams, and then who is going to win the finals. I don't know who you have. For me in the Eastern Conference, I have the Nets versus 76ers, the top two teams in the East. It's becoming hard to count out Giannis and the Bucks.
That's my pitch is Nets-Bucks.
It's Nets-Bucks.
Yes.
I think I still my concern still with Giannis is if a team the recipe is now you build a wall and you can stop them, you can stop him. So has he figured out how to get around when a team builds a wall in the paint? Now, the team best suited to build a wall and to guard Giannis is the 76ers. So it's not a good matchup for them. I think having Drew Holiday really does help them. The record is much better when they have Drew.
Yes.
Is that the piece that helps them overcome the hump, that helps Giannis to overcome his playoff difficulties? We'll see. But I don't know.
In the playoffs, it's a lot about defensive intensity. And now, granted, that wasn't where they struggled in the playoffs last year. But I think having Drew helps take some of the defensive pressure off Giannis. And he'll be able to put a little more energy into offense and maybe be able to get past the walls other teams are putting up on him.
Yeah.
But, you know, that could be a big leap, too. So
I'm not sure. Like I said, in the Philly game, he hits a crazy layup that I thought he was falling down, and then he throws it up. And then the next shot down the court is a pull-up three. Pretty quick. He took his time, but it was pretty quick for him. And then it's a mid-range, behind-the-back dribble, mid-range pull-up jumper. So I'm like, oh, if you're going to do that, okay. I mean, yeah, I get it. And then the Nets, I just need the talent, the offense.
And you got Kevin Durant.
You got Kevin Durant and Kyrie, who is, I mean, one of the best – statistically one of the best playoff players in the playoffs. Harden, who is, again, just this roving world of offense in which he's either spraying assists or points or going to the rim or threes or fucking anything. It could be anything with him. And it's really hard to pick against. So you have Bucks Nets.
Yes.
So which team of those do you have going to the finals?
It's tough for me, but I have the Nets.
The Nets.
I think I tweeted about this earlier this week. I think Harden is one of the best all-around offensive players in NBA history.
Absolutely.
Top three, I would say.
I completely agree. People would look at you like you're crazy because they hate Harden. Like, you understand because you used to hate Harden.
For everyone who doesn't know this, I was a James Harden hater until, like, I don't know, 2-3 months ago.
Yeah.
I'm just complete 180 because I've seen what he's been doing in Brooklyn. And I also saw the end of his Rockets tenure. And I just realized, like, shit, yeah, this guy's way too good for this team.
Way too good.
He really is. It's not that he's being a selfish player like Westbrook, which is what I was initially thinking. It's just he's the only fucking option this team has, yes. And it's not close.
Yes.
I mean, he has to be this much of a volume guy for his team to even have a chance. And that's what he was doing, and he was being fantastic at it. And now he goes to the Nets. He doesn't need to play that role. So he's, you know, in a different, just more facilitative, less scoring. And he's fantastic at that, too. And, I mean, his athleticism's gone down a bit, and he's still one of the most dangerous players out there.
I just think his basketball IQ, just all these years, and so much time spent handling the ball, being the primary ball handler, just the IQ he must have at this point. He's seen every defense. He's seen every look. He knows exactly where to put the ball to, where to get it to an open shooter. As long as the guy knows to be there, that's all he needs. And now, frankly, for him, it's, oh, I could kick it out to Joe Harris, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the league. Or I could kick it out to Kyrie, who's just one of the best scorers in NBA history. And eventually, you know, we've seen it a little bit, but Kevin Durant, one of the best scorers in NBA history. Or I could throw it up for a lob to DJ, who is still a great lob catcher. He hasn't lost that talent. He could still, you know, roll to the rim. And on top of that, all the offensive weapons he has for himself. So he really can just go with the best option that he sees. And that means the basketball is like the purest and the most beautiful I've seen from him. Because that year that we were talking about earlier, that 34 points per game year, I remember watching that year. He had some stretches where it was like 52,
I was 58. Tired for him watching those games.
Huh?
I was tired for him.
Yes.
Watching those games.
A couple 61-point games that year. I mean, this guy was pouring it on like crazy. And that was the year I noticed that he's climbing the three-point ladder. Like I said, fifth in all-time three-pointers make. Going to be right behind Steph for number two by the time he hangs it up. I mean, just
most likely.
A couple more years, he'll be right there. There we go with the Nets and the Harden tangent. All right. So you have the Nets in the finals. I have the 76ers in the finals, and I'm just betting on the defense. Frankly, actually, sometimes Philly's offense makes me worried, but they somehow always manage to pull it together. Embiid, I'm just a little worried about Embiid. Like, will he continue to be this dominant? Because if he is this dominant on offense, the only thing that holds me back from absolutely believing them is do I believe he'll be consistent? Because if he'll be consistent on offense, their defense is just, they have the ability to torture people. I have not seen them use a zone much this year, which is interesting watching March Madness. A lot of college basketball teams use zone, and it's fun to watch personally. But imagining a zone with Embiid locking down the paint, and then you have Simmons and I would say Matisse Thybulle out on the wings. And then in the corner, you have Tobias Harris and, I don't know, Hyde Seth Curry over there. That's an insane zone defense. You're not getting to the rim. So that maybe doesn't work against the Nets, who can hit any shot. But if you throw it out there in little spurts, that'll seriously mess up any offense. Because any attempt to go to the rim, like, oh, you're going to try to drive through Matisse Thybulle, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. Ben Simmons, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. With Embiid locking down the paint, good luck.
You can't.
There's nothing there. The offense doesn't exist to deal with that. If KD can drive past Simmons and hit one of his pull-ups, it's like you have to live with it. But everything would be a nightmare in that zone. So I'm betting on the 76ers defense. On the Western Conference Finals, I picked, it's funny to like type it out just based on record and just based on everything that's going on, but I'm thinking it's Lakers-Nuggets. I think it's Lakers-Nuggets again. I don't think the Jazz have enough to sustain the playoffs, because all offensively, all a defense has to worry about is Donovan Mitchell. And that's when it. Clarkson comes in, you got to, you know, try to slow down Clarkson. That's it. Those guys, you put enough pressure on those guys, it's not enough. And Rudy is not an addition on offense, frankly. So
Rudy's an addition on offense.
Yes.
For those who don't know, that's why I can't stand him.
Yes.
Because he's a liability anytime he's within 5 feet of the ball on offense. He's actively harming the team.
Yeah. His hands are so bad, he really is more of a risk to turn it over when he tries to catch anything around the rim. It's just ugly to watch. He doesn't have touch. It's crazy. Phoenix, I think they have Chris Paul and Jay Crowder, but they're too young. They just have no experience. They really are.
And that's what's keeping me from picking them, too, is they can't handle that kind of intensity.
If you had this squad with this talent, with these abilities...
If they made the playoffs last year, I'd be comfortable picking them.
I would feel much more comfortable, but Booker is going to see the playoffs for the first time. Bridges, Cameron Johnson, Cameron Payne, Javon Carter, all these guys, all these important players in this team have not seen the playoffs.
No.
And
they might make it out of the first round.
I think they'd be a fun second round team, really. I think they will. Yeah. I think Chris Paul can drag you through a first round series. Because of the Lakers injury issues that they're having, if they take a serious slide, they could end up really making the playoffs weird, where they're a 6 or a 7 seed, but they're essentially a 1 seed. So whoever is in, 2, 3, 4, 5 has to be scared against playing maybe the champs, So that adds a real dimension to the playoffs. The reason I have the Lakers and the Nuggets, obviously I just think the Lakers are a championship team. They're the same team, and they're as good as anyone.
Yeah.
The Nuggets, I just think they had a bad start. It was part of, the quick return. Those guys were exhausted. I think Murray was injured. And a lot of his team, Will Barton's coming back from injury. Michael Porter Jr. is still super young, and he still is trying to pull it all together.
And he's playing better every single game. I mean, he, still made some bonehead, third-year,
second-year bonehead moves.
But...
yeah.
Overall, his defense is much improved, and that was our biggest hope from going into this year. And he's achieved that.
He continues to be a great rebounder and an efficient shooter. If he took more shots, he would score a lot more. He just doesn't, because obviously you want Jokic and Murray taking more shots, so that's his role. But I think the Nuggets, the Clippers can't match up with the Nuggets. I don't think the Suns would be able to beat the Nuggets as kind of based on it. These guys
can't handle Jokic.
And these guys are so experienced. The Nuggets have been through a lot of playoff games.
They've had 3 7-game series in the last 2 years.
Four. They had one against the Spurs, one against Portland.
That's right.
And
that's
7 against the Jazz, 7 against the Clippers, and it was 5 against the Lakers, and they were so tired.
Yeah.
And Murray was hurting. Something was wrong. I don't know. I think he hurt his leg or something. I don't remember. Remember when Paul George landed on his hips?
Mm-hmm.
He really slowed down after that. That was not easy. I think the Nuggets have kind of just the best team, the best shot. And I think from Jokic in the playoffs, we're going to see 28 to 32 a night, 12 to 14 rebounds, and 8 to 10 assists. And I think this guy is going to be a freaking dominant player in these playoffs. And I think it's going to be hard for teams to match up with him, frankly.
I agree with that. And that's why, you have, Lakers Nuggets for your conference.
Yep.
I have the same. And for me, whoever wins that just depends on what version of AD
there is. Yeah, that's all it is.
Because Bron's going to be fine. If the Lakers get a good version of AD, I'd say it's probably Lakers in 6 or 7.
And the addition of if Schroeder
AD
and
AD is what he was before he got hurt, Nuggets in 6.
He speaks for both of us on this one. So we have... your Western Conference Finals kind of varies, but we have a very different looking finals from each other. Yes. So my finals is 76ers Nuggets. I just don't like this AD shit. I really don't. I really, really think in a weird year, in a weird situation, to be coming off injury and to have this so much time.
Deep down, I understand where you're coming from. It's just I'm worried about LeBron's window, too.
Oh, yeah.
I want LeBron to get that number 5, and AD's fucking... He's risking that form right now. Just not for me right now.
Taking it personally. So I have 76ers Nuggets, which is such a weird finals. Like, can you imagine? First of all,
who expected that?
The two big men. Would that not signify the? We've been talking about unicorns and big men for a couple of years. There's been a bunch of guys, including like Giannis and KP and Kat, even though he's never done anything, in, you know, at all. And Jokic. Jokic versus Embiid would be awesome. I think the 76ers defense might swallow up the Nuggets a little bit.
I think they'd win that series.
I think they win that series. I just think, like, the fact that they can match up with Jokic, which means...
Not many teams can.
Not many teams can. And then, like, you can put Harris on Michael Porter, and it's, I think that's essentially a wash. It's pretty close to a wash.
Yeah.
And then if you can keep Ben Simmons on Murray.
He can't do anything about Ben Simmons.
Can't do anything about Ben. I can always see him in any playoff series having a game where he scores 42 and just hits every shot and gets those little, remember against the Clippers, those little like mid-range, like I didn't know what he was going to do, and he would just pull up, make a decision.
But he needed multiple of those per series last year, and he got them.
Yeah.
Simmons won't give him more than one.
Simmons won't give him more than one, if not any. I mean, that's the torture chamber. So
yeah,
it would be an unfortunate ending for the Nuggets, but I think 76ers versus Nuggets, and you have a much, you have a more exciting.
Yeah,
it would be a more exciting. Your finals is more exciting than mine.
Yeah, I've got either Nets Lakers or Nets Nuggets.
Man, okay, so if the Lakers can come out of the Western Conference, they're gonna be really good. I mean,
they will
probably have the defense is, I mean, the defense is also, I mean, I'm thinking about the 76ers, but that Lakers defense last year was the reason they won the title. And Schroeder is an incredible defender. He's just extremely feisty and athletic and smart, so he can keep up with guys. And Marcus Gasol, just having him off the bench, if you need 12 minutes of an ex-defensive player of the year, like, who can also pass and rebound. Like, it's nice to have that guy.
Yeah. And I think the Lakers could take the Nets in that series. It'd be a long series, but I think they could do it.
It'd be a long series. I don't know if KD can guard LeBron for 7 games.
I think for that to happen, LeBron would have to start actually scoring. He can't just be the facilitator
that
he's been for the last couple of years. I mean, and you know, as a facilitator, he's still putting up almost 30 points a game, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
But he'd have to be putting up 35.
Yeah, that's getting close to the 2018 level.
He would have to be 2018 to get past these Nets. That
was 3 years ago.
I know.
He could probably, but you know what? He kind of like in the finals last year.
Good AD, they'll be all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, that's the Nets prop, just the matchup with bigs. I just am so curious.
Because I think AD should probably take KD on defense. He's one of the very few people who can.
Absolutely.
And I think he can definitely take him on offense because he's so much bigger.
That's a real match. This is what we were saying last year and why they were so fun to watch. They're a matchup problem for everybody. Yeah. So it's like, oh, you can guard AD. Good. What about LeBron James? Okay, you put your best player on Anthony Davis. All right, cool. What about LeBron James? What's your plan for that guy? And then, like, I always feel about this team, there will be some Caruso tip-in dunk or crazy rebound or some block or steal or some Kuzma flying in offensive rebound for a putback in an and one, or some three at the end of a quarter that puts them up from 10 to 13. Like,
exactly. And I'm saying all this not even really considering how much Kuzma's improved this year.
Not just on his offenses. His numbers actually offensively have not gone up. They've gone down. But he's significantly improved on defense. And he's 6'10 and super athletic. Like, he should be a good defender.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was on him that he wasn't a good defender. And he's put in the work, and he says, yo, I want to play next to LeBron James, and I want to be a champion. So he figured out what to do. And like we were saying earlier, with Schroeder, just LeBron and Schroeder, they're like 12-1. Like Schroeder was, there was when they there was a period in the season where people were panicking about the Lakers when AD went out, but they didn't take AD went out and then Schroeder went out due to COVID protocol at the same time in the beginning.
And I think a lot of people, myself included, didn't realize until
it was really just quiet.
How important Schroeder was for them.
It was really quiet that he was out. I don't even remember because AD went out, so it was like, oh my god, AD is out, and then Schroeder goes out, you know, the next morning because they're like, oh, COVID protocol. But we're all like, holy shit, AD's out with an Achilles strain. Like we're freaking out about that, so we're not thinking about Schroeder. They lose four in a row. I think they win one, and then he comes back and no problem. They're fine.
Yep.
They just a competent point guard is all LeBron ever needs, frankly, and they're fine without him. Wow, Nets Lakers, that'd be a fun matchup.
Yeah,
Nets Nuggets.
Nets Nuggets. I mean, I'd have to take the Nets.
And have to take the Nets. They don't match up great with Jokic. Jokic can bring that big old body down into the paint.
Yeah,
probably over and over again.
Jokic would definitely be. I would argue the best player to that series.
Yeah.
But they don't have an answer for Durant on defense.
Porter Jr. would be
toast.
His improvements on defense would suddenly not look so good trying to guard. And like Paul Millsap.
Kevin Durant would give him 30 points a night.
Jamichael Green. Yeah. But now if we still had Jerami Grant, I would feel a little more comfortable. Not good, but at least give me a... But
Jamal Murray is going to get tortured by Harden or Kyrie.
Ugh.
On defense.
And then, you know, we frankly don't have the muscle to guard them.
No.
Campazzo can make life a little hard on Kyrie. He can stick with them.
But if we're relying on Campazzo. I mean, he's I don't know. I can see Kyrie crossing him up pretty quick, too.
Yeah.
It's
yeah. Yeah. Zeke Nnaji, he's just not there. It's his first year. He, every time I watch them, he is really good on defense. Really good at moving his feet and staying in front of the defender, whether they're a guard or a
Oh, he's impressive defensively for how young he is.
And he's fine from three. He's a catch and shoot guy, you know, from the corner, and he's
yeah.
He, you know,
nothing wrong with that. We actually need that.
Yes,
because right, I mean, for a while we've been fucking relying on Paul Millsap.
I know
for that.
Yes, Nnaji. I'm really excited to see the next couple of years with him because I think his defense can get much better. He's still young. He has the frame to like become a really, really good defender.
Yeah.
And when he got to the Nuggets, that's what he said. I want to become a great defender. I want to become one of the best defenders in the NBA. So
like that.
We have one more thing to talk about. A fun note to close out on. Just an interesting thing, which is the Atlanta Hawks fired Lloyd Pierce. People did not seem to like him. The team kind of was out on him for a while, and that was pretty evident when they hired Nate McMillan to be head assistant. They fired Lloyd Pierce, moved up Nate McMillan. They've won 8 games in a row since moving him up to interim head coach, and they're 5th in the East. We saw him a lot of years in Indiana. This Atlanta Hawks team is still very young, but they have a lot of good players, and they were really disappointing. This is the most talent Nate McMillan has had. I don't know. Maybe there was a period with... Paul George as an individual talent, especially in some of those early Indiana years, he was really fun.
But that was it.
I mean, this is like a talented... Like DeAndre Hunter, before he got hurt, was like playing really well. Obviously, Trae Young. Obviously, John Collins. Clint Capella had 10 blocks in a game this year. Like, they have some fantastic Gallo. Like, Nate McMillan has risen Gallo from the dead, and it's awesome to see him play because it was fun with OKC last year. Same with Bogdanovich. The one who was on the Kings and was supposed to be traded to the Bucks, but then they fumbled that, and now he's on the Hawks. So this is interesting, something to keep an eye on for the next couple weeks, which is like, we're going to also, on top of seeing like, we're talking about how Charlotte's going to be in the playoffs, it's going to be good for this team to get some playoff experience, and it'll be fun. Who knows? Maybe there'll be some Trae Young game.
Trae Young, he's that we were talking about the last couple of years as a future MVP kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
So him getting that higher intensity again is exactly what he needs to take that next level.
And I don't know if he can ever really become a good defender, but it might really make it evident how important it is to find the way to be the best defender he can be when he's in the playoffs and he's being targeted over and over and over again because of his lack of defense. So hopefully it'll be good for his development and it'll be good for this team's development. And, you know, I don't hate this team. I don't want to like them based on how they play necessarily over the past year or two, but it seems like Nate McMillan has them in shape, playing well, and winning games, which is good.
Eight in a row.
That's good. That's really solid. This was a good one. We needed to do a long basketball one. There's a lot to talk about.
It's been a while since we talked basketball. Yeah. So we had a lot to catch up on.
We still have a lot of football coming up here. We're going to have a big pod to do. We talked about it on the last one, I think, where we're going to have to do a draft pod.
Yep, I'm going to have to get some notes together for that pretty soon here.
Yeah, so expect that, and just free agency. So there's a lot more for us to talk about.
Yeah,
NBA free agency, we'll see what happens in these next few days. Like, things might start popping off, some crazy shit.
We got to talk about that.
Yeah, Deshaun Cosby, we have to address that. We're going to leave it for now. Yeah. Maybe if we give it some time, we'll get some clarity, we'll get some something. So, but this has been a long one. It's time for Kai to go to bed.
Yes, I can see. Past my bedtime.
It's late here. So this has been TBT, Two Blunt Takes. Thank you for listening. Kai, do you have anything to say?
I do not.
Well,
sponsored by water.
Drink water, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, and have a good night.